What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Nicholas Tolkin, author and director of the new off-Broadway play, Terezin, and the Jewish grandson of famed author of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, J.R.R. Tolkin. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Too Jewish Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shinshinim Barel Kachar and Leah Avuno, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. The Jewish holidays cycle is filled with days of celebration and affirmation, times of great rejoicing and lovely songs and rituals. This time of year, however, our rituals are more serious and sadder than usual, but there's a reason and purpose to it all. This week we commemorate Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of the month of Av on the Jewish calendar, an important day of fasting and mourning in our tradition. This is the anniversary of the day on which both the first and second temples in Jerusalem were destroyed, the greatest calamities our people ever experienced until the Holocaust. In addition, Tisha B'Av is also the anniversary of the fall of Beitar at the end of the Bar Kokhba revolt in the year 135 and the expulsion of the Jews of Spain by Ferdinand and Isabella in the year 1492. For observant Jews of all denominations, Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, this day, Tisha B'Av, is a day of prayer, fasting, and introspection. On Monday night and Tuesday, we will chant the beautiful, tremendously mournful book, Eicha, Lamentations from the Bible. Eicha yoshva vodod. It is on Tisha B'Av, that day, that we recall the greatness of the temple and its annihilation at the hands, first, of the Babylonians in 586 BCE, 2,600 years ago, and later by the Romans in 70 CE, a little less than 2,000 years ago. We recall this sad day in the history of our people with a prayer of remembrance and hope now here on Too Jewish. Restore Jerusalem, your sacred city, in mercy. Yerushalayim Yircha, from a composition by Elstein, is sung by the late cantor and opera star Jan Pierce. May he rest in peace.
Yerushalayim Yircha, Berachamim et Oshu. Rachamim toshuv. V'sishkem besocho, v'sishkem besocho, v'sishkem besocho. Shalom Yircha Berachamim Toshuv Nefishki Bezaecho Nefishki Bezaecho Kasher Dibaharita Yerushalayim. Bainei, Yerushalayim.
Restore and rebuild Jerusalem. Well, today the Jewish quarter has been rebuilt, but there will always be a place in our hearts for the destroyed temple, which we honor as part of the observance of Tisha B'Av, the ninth of the Hebrew month of Av, which begins tomorrow night, Monday, at sunset. Traditionally, this is a fast day, without food or water, and as it falls in midsummer, when days are long and temperatures hot, it can feel like a particularly endless and difficult fast day. Interestingly, when I've been in Jerusalem for the remembrance of Tisha B'Av, I've found it to be both a moving and surprising experience. Of course, the destruction took place in that very place, most specifically the area of the Kotel, the Western Wall and the Temple Mount. The Western Wall, the Kotel, is the last remaining structure of that second temple. As you might expect, the chanting of the Book of Lamentations, Echa, is solemn and sad, as are the dirges and lamentations that accompany it and are sung and read on Tisha B'Av. And the public reading of the historical descriptions of the events surrounding both the first and second temples, the Churban Bayit Rishon V'Sheni, are powerful and deeply affecting. But each time I have been in Jerusalem on Tisha B'Av, and I've been there a few times, and gone to the Western Wall Plaza, the Kotel Plaza, to experience the night in the very place where it all happened, I have been startled to find it filled with mostly Orthodox young men and women with nothing else to do but, well, you know, flirt and meet each other. That is, there are no distractions on Tisha B'Av, no food, no drink, no parties, no place else to be, and so it has become, at least in the precincts of the long-lost temple, a time for the cultivation of shidduchs for young men and women to meet and try to find a mate. To be honest, I can't really think of a better way for Jews to affirm survival and flourishing in the land of Israel and Eretz Yisrael and in the holy city of Jerusalem than for new couples to be made in the shadow of the Western Wall on Tisha B'Av, which remembers the destruction, and in which we can reaffirm our vitality. It comes this Monday night and Tuesday, and whether you're in Jerusalem or not, it's a time to remember. Our guest this morning, Nicholas Tolkien, has written a dramatic new play about the famous show camp of Theresienstadt. The play is called Terezin in Czechoslovakia, the artists, actors, and musicians and children's camp, site of a notorious Nazi propaganda film made during the Holocaust. Nicholas Tolkien is also the Jewish grandson of J.R.R. Tolkien. Meet him when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Are you curious? Well, now we have everything you wanted to know about Judaism, but we're afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's famous Taste of Judaism program, now in its 18th year, offers an exploration of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, taught by our rabbis. This free introductory class is immensely popular in southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too. Call 327-4501 for more information and register today. Taste of Judaism is an exciting opportunity to learn more about Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. Rediscover your roots or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism. Classes are free and open to all, and we feed you too. We have daytime and evening classes in Central and Northwest Tucson, and this year also in Green Valley. Taste of Judaism starts soon, so don't miss it. Again, it's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501 or email temple@tetucson.org. Call 520-327-4501 for a fun way to learn about Judaism.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Nicholas Tolkien is the author and director of a very interesting new play off-Broadway called Terezin, about the Theresienstadt concentration camp and, well, a great deal more. He's also a filmmaker and, I have to mention it, the great-grandson of J.R.R. Tolkien. author of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Oh, good morning to you.
So what prompted you to work on Terezin?
Well, it's been it's about 7 years of work on this play to do justice to it and to do justice to what happened there. I first learned about it from a book, The Diary of Gonda Redlich, that was written as a diary in Terezin by an inmate there. And it gives this, I think, unparalleled view of what it was like to be in a concentration camp, especially by somebody who had a lot of faith and who was a very important writer, I think, at the time, and unfortunately, very sadly, didn't survive the war.
Terezin was the show concentration camp. Well, for the Nazis, the Red Cross toured it. There's a famous incident. They brought in a very prominent German Jewish filmmaker, eventually sent him to Auschwitz, pretty much sent everybody involved in the film. That filming plays a role in your play.
That's really what the play is about, is what it was like for the inmates in Terezin, who really had no choice but to be in this film and appeared in it, and how strange it is as a historical document to see these people and their faces and their expressions, which I think really do tell what they were really feeling, and the pain and the suffering of having to pretend that the world that they were living in was okay when it obviously wasn't. So I think that really was interesting to me on a human level, about what it was like, and also the sense of these people that were killed but also preserved on film by the Nazis. So that really intrigued me and opened this window into the story.
When you began to work, I mean, a lot has been done on Theresienstadt, and I Never Saw Another Butterfly. How did you decide which way to go in creating the play?
I looked at a lot of interviews, and I found that, and I actually went to Theresien, and I also spoke to a lot of survivors. There aren't many, but I tried to speak to a large amount of them. And I found that many of them that are still alive were children, and that Terezin had this strange sense about it, that there was still a measure of being treated like being allowed to be a human being, that you didn't have a uniform, that you could wear your clothes, that there was concerts, there was lectures, all of course in the name of propaganda, but at the same time there was a shred of life there that had not fully been taken away, a shred of dignity that people still had, and I was really interested in that and exploring that, and when I started to realize that from what these survivors were saying that many of these people were children, and there was a lot of children there. So what my play is about what it is like to be a child during a genocide. And you don't understand what's happening to you. You can't comprehend the world around you. You're losing your parents. You're losing the family. What does that feel like? And that was really the genesis for the play.
We will talk much more with Nicholas Tolkien about Terezin and his other work, and maybe a little bit about his family too. We'll come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, THAAZ.org, 529-3888.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcast, Top 10 in America. While we're on the subject of Tisha B'Av this morning, I started to think about Jerusalem and its nearly 3,000-year-old connection to the temple that stood at its heart. In truth, while the temple stood for the majority of a millennium, fully 1,000 years, it has now been absent from Jewish life and from that holy city of Jerusalem for 1,947 years, nearly twice as long as it ever stood. And while Orthodox Jews and most conservative Jews pray for its restoration speedily and soon in every prayer service they hold and in individual prayers, most liberal Jews and all secular Israelis see absolutely no possibility for the temple ever to be restored. In fact, it's quite unclear that most or even many Jews would really wish to return to a biblical form of Judaism featuring ritual sacrifices and purifications and pilgrimages to the temple. Cult of temple priesthood, if that were a real possibility, which frankly it is not. On the other hand, celebrating the greatness of the temple in its ancient glory and theoretically wishing for a restoration of God's presence to our midst, well, those are noble and appropriate goals for all Jews. And so as we approach Tisha B'Av, it's worth hearing some of the great synagogue classic Sheyabonah Beis HaMikdash, as sung by cantor Ben-Sion Miller. May the temple be rebuilt speedily in our day, at least in our hearts. That was Sheyabonah Beis HaMikdash, sung by Ben-Sion Miller from the Milken Archives recording. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So in Jewish lore, Riga is an important Jewish place, destroyed really in the Holocaust, but you were there recently.
Right. So after my recent visit to Israel that we talked about in last week's show, I made a couple stops in Europe to visit old friends, Vienna, Berlin, Riga, and Helsinki. And I don't think we've talked about Riga before on this show. It's the capital of Latvia. The vast majority of Jews there were eliminated in the Holocaust. And there's a very interesting, although it's temporarily displaced while they're renovating the old building, there's a museum of the occupation of Latvia. And Latvia was occupied first by the Soviets, then by the Nazis, and then again by the Soviets. And it was one of the places where the armed battle that brought the Soviet Union to its knees and caused it to dissolve began, and lives were lost and shots were fired. And there's a lot of hostility between ethnic Latvians and ethnic Russians. And that's true to one degree or another in the two other Baltic countries, too,
Estonia,
Lithuania and Estonia, right? One, at least, of those three countries made it a requirement for the Russian minority, if they wanted to get a passport and be citizens of the country, they had to learn the language. Latvia didn't do that. And oddly, I mean, first of all, Riga is a gorgeous city. It has more Art Nouveau buildings than any city in Europe, more than Prague or Vienna or Budapest. It's an incredible, if you're an Art Nouveau lover, it's where you got to go and make a pilgrimage. Second of all, it has great food and a lot of beautiful people, men and women, tall, statuesque, blonde, blue-eyed, but not all that way. I mean, there's a big variety. But apparently, ethnic Russians still control the economy and the local politics and the government. So I was talking with a bartender one night, and his English was capable. He was a little stilted and formal and distant. People in the Baltics tend to be a little shy anyway. But the place was emptying out. It was near closing. We got like one more round of drinks, and I offered him a drink. And then I switched into Russian, thinking maybe he's Russian. Well, he's not. He's Latvian. But he said, and I don't think he would have said this had I not spoken with him in Russian and gotten him to open up a little. He said that it's possible to live in Latvia only speaking Latvian, but it's not possible to get a job because all the jobs in the posted like pay well are all controlled by Russians, whether it's private sector, public sector, whatever. He said, you got to be bilingual. And so he, at least, and this was pretty widespread. I checked with a few other people too. Even though they're living in an independent country, they still feel to some extent kind of occupied and controlled by Russians.
Yeah, it's no surprise. You'd mentioned the Jewish community is sort of reviving there because of Chabad.
Yeah, there is a remarkable revival. I think maybe not limited to Chabad. I think the Reform movement also has a small outpost there.
There is a World Union for Progressive Judaism synagogue in Riga now. That's correct.
Right. It is smaller than
smaller.
I mean, Chabad's been there longer. Yeah. Like as soon as the Soviet Union fell apart, Chabad opened branches in all these new countries.
Right. They sent emissaries to
They found
Shechem.
People with remote Jewish roots and revived their Judaism and really, you know,
got it started.
My team.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, bringing life to the dead. And now other branches, more liberal branches, are moving in too to kind of broaden the range.
Yeah,
it's just
exciting.
Amazing. You know, when you go there, it's really unbelievable to see.
Yeah, actually, when you walk out of this museum, which is, as I say, temporarily in another building, and the temporary exhibition isn't as good, but there's a lot devoted to the Jewish community. And you walk out and you feel like just shouting, Am Yisrael Chai.
Yeah.
You know, the people of Israel lives.
Thanks, so, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome Leah Avuna, our Shin Shinid, representing Israel and the Weintraub Israel Center, and, well, really the whole state of Israel here in Tucson. Welcome, Leah. Good morning.
Boker Good morning, tov. Rabbi. Boker Tov.
So tomorrow will be Tisha B'Av. That's a very important day, the commemoration of the destruction of the temples in Jerusalem, the 9th of Av. And it has a new meaning in Israel, in part because of a great tragedy. Can you talk about that? That took place 3 years ago.
Yes. So 3 years ago, there were three teenagers that they decided to go right after they finished learning. It was just a regular day. And in Israel, you just catch someone, like you know, yeah. Put your thumbs up, like old
hitchhiking, days, old it's fashion. Called here. It's the same thing. You just put up a thumb and everybody in Israel does it.
Yeah,
soldiers
yeah.
do it. Teenagers do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's like a considered very common normal. Thing. Very common thing. I do it with my friends in my city. And one time, three teenagers got kidnapped by a terrorist.
This is June 3 years ago.
Yeah. Right. Yes, June of 3. I think it was June 3rd.
Somewhere 5th. Around there, yeah.
Yes, and so for days and days, everybody were looking for them. The Facebook and Twitter and all the social medias was exploding with everybody were looking for the teenagers, for any kind of piece of information for them. And unfortunately, we found them dead. So they got killed. They got murdered by those terrorists. And... also, there was another thing. Some people would say that it's a reaction to what happened, but a Jewish man decided to kill an Arab boy to light them on fire, and it was just a really messy time in Israel. Everybody
horrible.
Were fighting everybody. It was just everybody were trying to figure out what led to that thing. Like what? I mean, the conflict was always there, you know, but this specific time was so crazy. Everybody was so afraid and everything, and. Because of that day, actually, the mother of the three teenagers, all the mothers decided to start up a nonprofit organization and actually a special day in Israel called Yom Achdut.
Unity Day.
Unity Day. Right. Yes, that will be the translation. And basically, everybody in Israel will do something nice to someone else. It's not Jews between Jews. It's not Palestinians between Palestinians. It's everybody to everybody because in Israel we're all Israelis. We all live together. Some of the projects are really nice. One of my best friends actually her friends and her decided to take one of the cookie recipe of one of the teens of Gilad, and they baked them and they made everything and they handed to people in the mall. Just a random act of kindness.
Huh.
Yes, a lot of people would even do marathons and things in honor of the three teenagers. And everybody's just doing one single thing that is one nice thing.
Like an act of kindness, right?
Yes, one act of kindness. So, yeah.
It's a great concept. And some of them do it on Tisha B'Av.
Yes. So Tisha B'Av will be the day where everybody is actually doing something, of course, because of what happened with the temple. And we can see things that until today that hate is just, you know, it have very, very, very bad effect on all of us, not just one side. And Tisha B'Av, not just by fasting, people will do a lot of other things. They will fast and they will go out into the streets. They will help homeless people. They will help children in need. Everything that you can do. The smallest thing that you can do is making someone day better. So everything that you can do is good.
It's a great message. Something we should do every day, but particularly on Tisha B'Av.
Yes.
Thank you, Leah. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Rabbi.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov. Good morning.
Good morning. Boy, it's hard to believe we're getting close to coming back to school.
Oh my gosh, where did that go?
You know, the summer flies away like the rising heat.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you experience this? Like the older we get, the faster things go. It's just like buckle your seatbelt.
I know.
June,
I feel
July,
like
gone.
An old Joni Mitchell song or something. You know, you're trying to slow down the merry-go-round. But we're going to be back.
That's right. Here we go. Exciting times, really.
It is exciting. And, you know, what we tend to forget after we've done this a few times is how dramatic and sometimes challenging the beginning of a school year is for kids.
It's exciting for kids. I think dramatic is a great word because there's all these expectations and anticipations. And every child is different, right? As we talk about over time, and every age is different. And so
I have three children. They're three only children, actually.
That's awesome.
They're all different.
It's hard for teachers and staff too, you know, and we kind of joke that now the parents get a break because it's been a little more intensive at home with them and taking care of the kids all the time, unless they're at camp or something. But it's very taxing. It's an exciting time, but it's a tough time, and you kind of have to gear yourself up for we're starting the marathon again. We have to have a long view. It's a long school year. There's a cycle to it, and the excitement that comes at the beginning, we want to see how long we can make that energy last and carry us through into a good start for the year.
When parents are preparing kids, because there's a psychological process of, mm-hmm. you know, we're leaving summer. Either we've been at camp, hopefully a Jewish day camp,
right,
or a Jewish overnight camp for the summer. And we've had a lot of freedom, really, and flexibility. And now all of a sudden we're moving into something that's so structured, because yes. school is structured.
Yep. And you got to be up early and you got stuff to do throughout the day. And often kids have programming and homework in the evening. So kind of getting back into that routine is a really great strategy. Getting back to a normal bedtime, making sure that the day kind of paces itself correctly, where you're up at a reasonable time, you're having breakfast, you know, after some activities and things, you have a lunch, and then dinner comes at an appropriate time, and then bedtime. And that's hard. I remember as a kid, you know, being put to bed when it was definitely still daylight outside.
Oh, I hated that.
And what was up with that? But, you know,
we used to sneak the transistor radio in and listen to the Dodgers games, but, you know.
Nice. Yeah. So building back those routines and getting back into a structure, and yay, maybe picking up a book and doing a little bit of reading, maybe dusting off some of those multiplication cards or that math packet that your teacher gave you to do over the summer, and getting your head into an academic space really helps to be prepared for what's coming next.
And what's coming isn't bad. It's good, but it's definitely different. It requires that transition time.
Yep. And, you know, there are some families still looking around for schools. Opportunity abounds in Tucson. We'd love to have you come in. Check out THA.
Do check it out. Thanks so much, John. We'll talk next week.
Have a great week.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us?
The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A Reform rabbi is having an argument with an Orthodox rabbi. He asks him, "Why don't you let men and women in your shul sit together as they do in my congregation?" The Orthodox rabbi replies, "If you want to know the truth, I don't really mind them sitting together. The problem is, I give sermons. I can't have them sleeping together." That was an entirely apocryphal story and an old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and stay awake. And now a word of Torah. This week, we read the second portion of the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy in the Torah, the remarkable Sedra Vayetchanan. Vayetchanan includes more than one truly spectacular text, the Shema, the central statement of God's oneness in the world. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, Hear Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, followed immediately by the Ve'ahavta, the commandment to love God with all our hearts, minds, and strength. As if that were not enough honor for one Torah portion, Vayetchanan also includes the recitation of the Ten Commandments, the Aseret HaDibrot, for the second time in the Torah.
If you were to rank Torah portions, you could easily put Vayet Hanan near the top, just in quality of content. After all, a portion that includes the essence of Jewish monotheism, the Shema, and the Ten Commandments, centerpiece of all Western ethics, is a pretty spectacular weekly parsha by anyone's standards. It is no accident that this powerfully affirming portion is read just after Tisha B'Av, on Shabbat Nachamu, the Sabbath of Consolation, for we take comfort in our knowledge that morality and holiness will ultimately bring justice. So what more can we possibly learn about these most famous texts in our tradition? The Shema itself is really just a sentence. Listen, Israel, God is your Lord. God is only one. A straightforward statement of oneness, and one that should be easy to both understand and accept. Wholeness, holistic oneness. So simple, in fact, anyone can understand and embrace it. Although, of course, simple and true ideas often struggle for acceptance. Still, not a complex concept, oneness. Although in truth, well over 3,000 years since we Jews first articulated the idea that God is one, far less than half the world's population actually believes in the oneness of God. But it's the text that follows the Shema in our Vayet Hanan Torah portion this week, the Ve'ahavta, that is the more subtle and in many ways more intriguing passage. For in that prayer we are commanded to love God. Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha, love the Lord your God with all your mind, soul, and heart. My friends, many things in life can be commanded, obedience certainly. But love, it seems, is distinctly not one of the things that can be commanded. So what does the Torah mean when it says we are commanded to love God? It's a strange idea, but a very powerful one. For love is essentially a kind of unconditional way of giving, of focusing attention and caring on another being. When we love another person, we pay attention to them. We hear them. We care about them. Similarly, loving God means paying attention to God, to God's existence in our world, to God's oneness, to God's moral code for us. In this case, we express our love of God, our ahava, by demonstrating that we have learned how to listen, Shema. If we truly listen, then we will know that we must act ethically, that that is the greatest form of love for God. In essence, loving God means that we are obligated to listen to and follow God's mitzvot, to live moral lives, to do so with energy and commitment, with integrity. It also means that being good, morally good, is a form of love, perhaps the purest form of love. May we all find a way to express that love through the righteous actions of mitzvot, and in doing so, come to affirm God in our world. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Nicholas Tolkien, playwright, director, and practicing Jew, as well as a movie maker, will tell us about his production of his new play, Terezin. Also, learn what it's like to be J.R.R. Tolkien's Jewish grandson. When we come back in a moment, right here on To Jewish.
Are you curious? Well, now we have everything you wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Temple Emanuel's famous Taste of Judaism program, now in its 18th year, offers an exploration of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, taught by our rabbis. This free introductory class is immensely popular in southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too. Call 327-4501 for more information and register today. Taste of Judaism is an exciting opportunity to learn more about Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. Rediscover your roots or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism. Classes are free and open to all, and we feed you too. We have daytime and evening classes in Central and Northwest Tucson, and this year also in Green Valley. Taste of Judaism starts soon, so don't miss it. Again, it's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Temple Emanuel at 327-4501 or email temple@tetucson.org. Call 520-327-4501 for a fun way to learn about Judaism.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help. We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Batsheva Appel.
Muslim worshippers continued to stay away from the Temple Mount, even though metal detectors installed by Israel have been removed. The increased security had been added in the wake of the murder of two Israeli police officers. Israel is prepared to spend $30 million to install unobtrusive security measures, but the Muslim Waqf is rejecting any security measures as Israeli overreach. Muslims have been praying outside the gates of the entrance, leading to clashes and the deaths of at least five Palestinians in recent days. Thousands attended the funeral of three members of a family killed in a Palestinian stabbing attack in the West Bank. Yosef Salomon, 70, and his children Chaya, 46, and Elad, 36, were buried in the cemetery at the central Israel city of Modi'in. Tova Salomon, 68, Yosef's wife and mother to the two other victims, was allowed to leave the hospital for the funeral. She had been seriously injured in the attack. Some 10,000 mourners were expected to attend the funeral. Omar al-Abed, 19, from the nearby Palestinian village of Kobar, entered the home of Yosef and Tova Salomon in the Chalamish settlement and began stabbing the family members who had gathered to celebrate the birth of a baby to another of the senior Salomon's sons. The employees of Israel's diplomatic mission in Amman, Jordan, returned to Israel. Among them was the Israeli embassy guard who was stabbed with a screwdriver by a Jordanian teen. The guard shot and killed Mohammed Jawadad, 17. The embassy had refused to turn the guard over to the Jordanians for questioning, saying he had immunity. Margaret Bergman Lambert, a high jumper who was barred from competing on the German team at the 1936 Berlin Olympics because she was Jewish, died in New York at 103. Just 1 month before the 1936 Olympics, Lambert won a meet against the best German high jumpers with a leap of 5 feet 3 inches, tying a German record. She was not allowed to participate in the Olympics, and her accomplishment was removed from the record books. At those same Olympics, a Hungarian athlete would go on to win the event with a jump just below 5 feet 3 inches. Lambert is survived by two sons, Glenn and Gary, two grandchildren, and a great-grandson. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. This is Rabbi Batsheva Appel.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Nicholas Tolkien, who is the author of the new play, Terezin, for Theresienstadt, and has worked in a variety of other media already, even though he is not an old man. He's also a member of the Tolkien family, a great-grandson of J.R.R. Tolkien. We were talking earlier about Theresien and what kind of a place it was, that there was some normalcy in the midst of this insanity. When you go back there, though, it has a sort of haunted quality, no?
I really feel it does. I think that people there's so many memories that people had there that it's almost like the memories got left behind in a way and preserved in the place. And I definitely felt when I visited there a sense that there were as many ghosts and the sense of haunting of people that had suffered, because there was so much fear in Terezin, a fear and an unknown, a fear of the unknown. You know, what was in the east? What were the transports? Where were they going? And I think that fear really, it becomes preserved in places like that.
In creating the play, what was the most challenging thing to overcome? Aside from the funding, of course.
Of course. I think the most challenging thing was the sense of Holocaust amnesia and fear of the Holocaust that permeates, especially American culture these days. I think that there's this strange dichotomy between a need to remember and also a need for a society to inoculate itself against really confronting the Holocaust and confronting why it happened and how it happened. And what happens is a lot of art that gets created about it has to either be a documentary or to be something that does not take any kind of artistic license. And the trouble is that a lot of young people today, they need a story. They need some sort of drama, of a play or a film in order to comprehend something. They don't want to pick up a history book. They don't want to visit places. They find history very dry and boring. So for me, it was a very delicate line to go between wanting to do immense justice and provide a huge amount of realism to the stories of what happened in Terezin, but also tell a story that I think can give people a sense of what it felt like to be there.
You know, the Diary of Anne Frank sort of changed the way people were willing to talk about the Holocaust, but in some ways it was kind of an antiseptic experience of the Shoah. How do you avoid that prettification?
Well, I think you know, the story of the Shoah is a story about the amount of people that were killed and the way that they were killed and the way that it happened, and the mistake I think some people make, and I tried not to make, is the sense that it's a survival story, and it's not. And if people did survive, it was often by accident and by luck. And to me, the story is about what occurred before people were killed, not necessarily that they were killed, but what happened in the few years that people spent in places like Terezin in transit camps before they were sent to Auschwitz or Treblinka or places like that. Because I think that to only define people as a victim, as a statistic, as a number, as a 6 million, it takes away the fact that these people had lives and homes and families and memories, and we have to find ways, and it's very, very difficult, to give the dead their humanity back. And I think it's the responsibility of especially young people today to not let the dead become faceless, but become real and almost alive again in people's minds. And it's very, very difficult.
You've worked in film. You've worked with stage. What do you like better?
I like the theater, and I'll tell you why. With film, you make a film and it exists in a database, or it exists on a network or a disc or on a computer. Whereas with a play, it exists in the memories of those that have seen it, and it's impermanent. And I think that there's something very much about life in that you know, everyone is mortal and we all die, unfortunately. But there's that we live on in a way in the memories of those people that we shared our life with. And I think theater does that.
Do you think you have a particular interest in the mystical?
I absolutely do, especially in Jewish mysticism. You know, I've always been fascinated by the way that oral tradition plays a part in how our collective, you know, Jewish story is passed down, and a lot of the rituals that I think theater is associated with are mystical in origin, because they exist in a way that doesn't require technology and doesn't require, it requires the human and the connection that the human has to God in a way to pass down this mystical tradition. So I've always been fascinated by that.
In creating a play, taking it to New York, bringing it off Broadway, what do you like best about that experience?
A great question. I think, you know, we've had a lot of old people that have come and seen the play who are incredibly moved by it. A lot of young people that come and see the play that are also moved by it. And I think that really is very powerful for me to see that, to let people who are older, who actually were alive, some of them fled the Holocaust. We actually had a survivor from Auschwitz that came and saw the play, who was very moved by it. That is very important to me, because it reminds people who lived through it that the younger generation is, and we have some third generation in the cast of survivors, that we're going to continue to remember what happened, and we're going to continue to talk about what happened in the Holocaust. And also the young people, that the education about Jewish history and spiritualism and the Shoah, it can be passed down to them through art. And I think it's the responsibility of artists like myself to do that, to tell stories that are risky, that are difficult to tell, difficult to bear, but to communicate them and to pass them down, so that unfortunately when we reach the point where there are no survivors left, the Holocaust is still ingrained in our consciousness, as it should be.
I want to thank Nicholas Tolkien for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about Terezin, the play?
Sure, they can go to terezintheplay.com, and it'll actually be transferring to more cities next year. So there'll be a chance for more people to go and see it.
Best of luck, and I'll be in New York soon. Hopefully I have a chance to see it. And thanks for being here on Two Jewish. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Two Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Two Jewish. Our guest will be Jeremy Cowan of the Schmaltz Brewing Company, founder of that delightfully innovative Jewish beer maker and a favorite guest of Two Jewish. And believe it or not, we are approaching the 15th anniversary of our Two Jewish radio show, which we will celebrate that very morning. And listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our twojewishradio.com website. Our playout this morning comes from the Israeli star Idan Reichel, Lifnei Sheyigamer. It's called Before It Ends. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, if you are fasting on Tisha B'Av, an easy fast, a good week, and a week, we pray most of all, of peace.
לא לפחד להתאהב שישבר הלב לא לפחד בדרך לאבד לקום כל בוקר ולצאת אל החיים ולנסות הכל לפני שיגמר לחפש מאיפה באנו ולחזור בסוף תמיד להתחלה למצוא בכל דבר עוד יופי ולרקוד עד שנופלים מעייפות או אהבה מכל הרגעים בזמן למצוא אחד לאחוז בו להגיד שהגענו תמיד לזכור לרגע לעצור ולהודות על מה שיש ומאיפה שבאנו לחבק אותה בלילה כשהיא נרדמת אז כל העולם נרגע לנשום אותה עמוק לדעת שתמיד אני אהיה שם בשבילה
לא לפחד להתאהב שישבר הלב לא לפחד בדרך לאבד לקום כל בוקר ולצאת על החיים ולנסות הכל לפני שיגמר לחפש מאיפה באנו ולחזור בסוף תמיד להתחלה.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.